responsible individual of your community who is on top of schedule as you were, and making sure that the speaker does not forget about the details.
I'm back.
Emails at the right times, even as recently as half an hour ago, sent me an email that maybe a traffic jam. To make sure we leave enough time to get here. So it's a real pleasure. And I'm going to tell you about here how wonderful it is to come together to support the efforts of those who take upon themselves to study and to master the laws of Shmiras HaLashon. And this is such an important endeavor. There's a story that the Chaim told that he was once traveling in a caravan with someone, and he noticed that the entire duration of the trip, this individual did not say a word. He didn't open his mouth. And finally, he turns to this man and he says, "You know, I'm just curious. Are you always so quiet by nature? How come you haven't said a word while we're traveling together? It's just the two of us." And he said, "Well, to tell you the truth, there's this new sefer that came out, the Shmiras HaLashon of the Chafetz Chaim. After you look at that, how can you speak anymore? How can you talk?" And the Chafetz Chaim said, "No, you have it all wrong. Before I wrote the sefer, I don't know how anybody ever opened their mouth. Once you've learned through the sefer, now you learn how you're able to talk, and now people can actually have the license to open their mouths." And that's really so much of what the sefer Shmiras HaLashon is about. It's not restricting our ability to speak, but rather it's giving us the ability to speak, but to speak in the proper way, and to express ourselves in the way that we should, and to talk about the things that are proper for us to talk about. And as the Chafetz Chaim said, to give us license to move forward in life, socializing with others, but doing it all within the proper context and within the proper way. So it's a great privilege for me to be here. And certainly, with those who are part of the group of Shmiras HaLashon, we just hope that you should continue in this very special endeavor. There are so many Jews all over the world who are involved in this, and it's a pleasure to meet some more of them, to see this special group of B'nai Aliyah who are interested in growing together and developing together, and specifically in this area of life. And as always, great kavod to be here in the presence of the Nora D'Astra. Thank you once again for opening your beautiful shul, and thank you for allowing me to share the great Torah with your community. So let me just go through a couple of points. I know that for those who are learning Shmiras HaLashon, you really don't need anything more than what you've already learned. You know it far better than I do. But perhaps just to give a little bit of chizuk, as I was asked to do, of course, as Mrs. Schreier mentioned, during the 9 days, this is a very appropriate time to talk about this. Regardless of whether or not you're studying Shmiras HaLashon, this would be a good thing to discuss either way. So now we have the opportunity to be mechazik each other, and we begin with the Mishnah Maseches Avos. The Mishnah writes, "Atal Yomer Chachamim Hizaru B'Debrecha." He begins by saying that we have to be very careful that the way in which we express ourselves is something that we think about very carefully. And I've often thought about this Mishnah. Why does it say, "Chachamim Hizaru B'Debrecha"? Pirkei Avos was not only written for Chachamim. Pirkei Avos is something that was written for everyone. Not only for a leader of the community, not only for a Talmid Chacham, it was written for everybody. So what does the Mishnah mean for the lay person who's reading this line and it's told, "Chachamim Hizaru B'Debrecha"? I think the answer is, why are Chachamim being singled out? Because they are the ones that have a platform to share their voice. And what the Mishnah is telling us is, be careful. If you have a platform to share your voice, be careful that you do it properly. Be careful and think 10 times over before you share what you're about to say, because it's so easy for people to misunderstand, or it's so easy for you to misspeak. It's not a people's misinterpretation. Sometimes a leader will speak inappropriately, and that is what the Mishnah is saying. You have to be so careful if you are the individual who has that platform. Now today, every single member of our community has that platform. Regardless of whether or not you're in a leadership position, you can post something online, you can put something on Twitter, on Facebook, on TikTok, I don't know how many here are involved in any of those, but you can send an email, and that can have explosive and devastating consequences. So all of us should consider ourselves as being warned in this Mishnah, "Chachamim Hizaru B'Debrecha." We all have a platform today, and we all have the ability, "Achayim V'Hamavis B'Yad HaLashon." We all have the ability to either positively impact others with the words in which we use, with the encouragement which we give, with the gift of speech that our Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us, with the gift of words, or we can unfortunately do the opposite. And it is so easy to do the opposite. It is so quick for us to make that decision. We're going to shoot off an email when we're in a rage, when we're upset, when we're frustrated, and you cannot take it back. Anyone here ever had an experience where you send an email and you wish there was a button that you can click that says take it back? I don't know. Ba'amet kulam sadikim, if nobody knows what I'm talking about. Either it means you don't use email, or it means that you really think carefully before you send something. But every so often we send something and then we're thinking to ourselves, should I really have sent that? I could have worded this differently. Even if I'm not being nasty, even if I'm not being disrespectful, even if I'm not saying something that I totally regret, but just the way I formulated it, I wish I would have rethought that for a few more minutes before I press send. But we don't have that option all the time. And it's something we need to be so careful about. And that perhaps is what it means, chachamim hizaru v'dibrei. We should all consider ourselves on a level playing field today. All of us are leaders in this regard. All of us are chachamim. And all of us need to be so careful about how we use our words. What distinguishes the characteristic that really distinguishes human beings above any of the other creations in the world is Vayiha Adam L'Nefesh Chaya. The Torah says in Parshas Bereishis that Adam was L'Nefesh Chaya. And in the first struggle, what exactly is it referring to when we're told that we were created L'Nefesh Chaya? What does it mean to have a Nefesh? Ubalis famously comments that Adam was created L'Ruach Mimalala, which means that what's the outstanding characteristic of who we are, what distinguishes us as human beings above any other part, any other facet of creation is that we were given the ability to speak, that we were given the ability to express ourselves, that we were given the ability to talk to one another. And that's what makes us special. That's what makes us unique. That is the holiest part of who we are. Consider the following. Understand the power of words not only in the devastating consequences that it can have in our interpersonal relationships, but think for a moment. Let's say somebody is very careful in the way they interact with others, but think in other areas of halacha, how important speech can be, and how consequential it can be as well. For example, we have a mesecta called Meseches Nedarim. Meseches Nedarim means there are 613 mitzvahs, plenty of things we're expected to do, plenty of things we're not supposed to do, but I can do something above and beyond that. Which, first of all, there's an interesting comment that the Gemara makes when it comes to neder. The Gemara says someone who takes a neder upon him or herself, a neder can be made by any adult, by anybody. Anyone who takes a neder upon themselves is ki'ilu bama bama. What does a bama mean? A bama is a private altar. If I take a neder upon myself, it's as if I built a private altar not in the place where sacrifices are supposed to be brought in the Beis Hamikdash. Now that's a very strange comment. How do you understand it? And the Maharal and many others try to explain, what exactly does it mean? If I take something extra upon myself, don't you think that it means I'm a holier Jew? Doesn't it mean that I'm doing more? So why does the Gemara condemn a person who takes a neder upon themselves when it would seem to be that this person is doing something positive? And the Maharal explains, again, in line with the 9 days, and I think it's such a beautiful interpretation. He writes, perhaps what it means is as follows. Take a step back and ask yourself, what's wrong with a person building a bama? Probably where that comes from is a sense of absolute dedication and devotion and love for our Kodesh Baruch Hu. I love God so much, I don't want to restrict my experience with God to be one that is only limited to a Beis HaMikdash. I want to have the opportunity to connect with Him all the time. I want to be able to bring karbanos and have them accepted all the time. So why should I only have it in the Beis HaMikdash? Why not build a private altar in my backyard? I live in the Galil. I live in the Golan. I live far away. I'm not able to make it to Yerushalayim, but I do want to connect with God. So I build a bama. So what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Isn't it a beautiful sentiment? Isn't it a beautiful feeling that a person has? Isn't that a point of connection that we want to build, that we want to grow? Explains the Maharal, because it's not the way God wanted it. God wanted that we should come together as a community and we don't take religion into our own hands and build a bama for ourselves. God wanted us to serve Him together as an am, together as a kehila. God wanted us to connect with Him in harmony and in unison. And that is done through a Beis HaMikdash, through a central mizbeach, through a central location in a Beis HaKnesses where all of us have the opportunity to connect together as a people with our leader. That's the way it was designed. Christ the Maharal, you think about a neder, and that's exactly what it is. The rest of the Jewish people are bound by 613 laws and principles. I am deciding to take the religion off on my own and I'm going to add on to it something which nobody else is entitled to be a part of. It's something that's just specific and unique to me. It's something that I feel passionate about, but nobody else is interested in it. Right from my heart, although it comes from a very holy and lofty, beautiful place, it's misplaced holiness. It's not the way God wants it to be. God wants us all to be serving Him together. He doesn't want us to stick out in our own ways. He doesn't want us to be accented in a certain area of life and leaving everyone else out. And therefore, writes the Maharal, this is why the Gemara says a person who takes a nether upon him or herself is ki'ilu bana bama, because both of those have a negative connotation that you're excluding the rest of the community. As we talk about the 9 days, and we have the opportunity to think about inclusion, we think about avasina, we think about serving our Kodesh Baruch Hu together, not only in interpersonal relationships, but in everything we do as a community. We remind ourselves this is exactly how our Kodesh Baruch Hu designed our community to be. This is what He wanted it to look like. Be it as it may, that was a long digression. But we're talking about the Dara. And the whole concept of the Nether is a fascinating concept. So what happens? I have a kosher bag of potato chips, and I take upon myself that I never want to eat potato chips again. Or for the next 6 months, I'm going to be careful never to eat potato chips in the duration, that duration of time. Suddenly, those potato chips have now transformed to become something that is no longer kosher for you. How did that happen? It was manufactured in a kosher factory. It was carried in the kosher providers, in the kosher supermarkets. It was something that was in my cabinet. It was something that has nothing at all wrong with it. All the ingredients are okay. And yet somehow, through the power of my words, I have transformed that item to now become something else from the reality that we see in front of us. And the Mefarshim explain, you see the power of words, so much so that if somebody eats it, we are told that he gets lashes. He is punished with malchus. How can you give someone malchus for eating potato chips which are allowed to be eaten? The answer is, well, you made them forbidden. And all of that just by saying three words, Hare ze alai. You know, this to me is considered to be off limits. Or saying something so basic and so simple as that. Or the same would apply if I take upon myself that I want this chair. Obviously I cannot because it doesn't belong to me. But say, for example, I would own this chair. I would be able to say, I want this to be in the property of Hekdesh. I want this to belong to the property of the Beis Hamikdash. It suddenly transforms itself from being a part of my property to now being owned by the Beis Hamikdash. And that is the case, which would mean that if I would then use it, being that I have now stolen from the property of the Beis Hamikdash because I am not allowed to use something that belongs to the Beis Hamikdash, I would have to bring a carpet to have a kapara. Think about it from another context. Under the chuppah, we've all been to a wedding. A chassan turns to the kala and says, Hare atmakudeshesli, just with a few words. What happens? Hare atmakudeshesli, I always say to a chassan when I'm being a son of Kedushin. He looks at the rabbi and he says, Hare atmakudeshesli. I'm like, I'm not married. You should turn to the kala and say, Hare atmakudeshesli, you are being married to me. But when he says that, suddenly the status changes. How can that be? This is a wonderful young woman. But now that he's just simply said those words, Hareyam Kudeshusli, and he's given her a ring, suddenly the whole reality changes. And what changes in her reality? If that woman were now to be in a relationship with another man, we know that halacha is that's punishable by death. And you see clearly the power of words. You see not only in interpersonal relationships, but you see that there is a power in words that it can transform a reality to be something else that perhaps we never thought could be created just by simple words alone. The Rambam has a famous comment where he says, something that is considered to be more exalted, more sublime, something that is holier, is also something that has the ability to be charev yoser rechaveiro. It is something that can be more catastrophic than other things in life. And I think that this would be something that would be included in that category. The power of words is so powerful in both directions. It is something that can give comfort. Our words are something that can give help and assistance to others who need it. At the same time, our words can be the most devastated part of who we are. It can be something that can ruin and destroy other people's lives. And we need to be so careful, and we need to be so vigilant and so mindful of how we use this gift of our speech. In fact, the Maharal, when he talks about what Dibur is, what words actually are. He said that is the connection between heaven and earth. What does that mean? It's the connection between heaven and earth. He says we're all made up of a spiritual side. We all have a ruach. We all have a spirit. And how does that come out? How does it express itself? Our inside, which is hidden. Our inside, which is our neshama. Our innermost feelings, which are so personal, somehow come out and express themselves in our words. And that's the place where he writes, Ruchnius and Gashmius come together. It's where heaven and earth meet each other. And that is why words have the power to be so constructive, but at the same time, to be so destructive as well. So let's look at a beautiful paragraph from Rabbi Yonasan Eibischitz. Yonasan Eibischitz is one of the great Gedolim in Germany. He was a rabbi in Prague, in Altoona, Hamburg. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibischitz writes as follows, called Dibur Sheyotzei Roshe. Every word that comes out of our mouths makes an impression, is significant, it has an impact. Bubabano Singh Harabi, he says, unfortunately in our generation, other than the Fatve Palayom Dvarim, we know that people are so casual, so reckless, and irresponsible with their words. The Eidam Argish and the Chaldamar Osiroshim, people don't realize that every word that they say actually makes a difference in either direction. Either makes a positive difference, or potentially in the opposite direction. So we look at something from the 15th century, from the Arba Sadiqim. And he quotes a story from a Medrash. And the Medrash tells us, Maiser Rabbi Gamliel, Sha'asa Suda Benasam Ra'abra L'Shabas L'Vashel. Rabbi Gamliel made some kind of get-together with all of his closest friends, and he, for some reason, decided that they were going to cook tongue as the main course of the meal. Asa Mehem L'Shabas, Asa Mehem Kasher. Some of them were overcooked, some of them were well done, and other ones were very soft and undercooked. Hifnis of Neim Harakos, he brought in the main course, and those of us that were not cooked as much. The Chazon of Asa of Neim Harakos, then he brought in the next platter that had all the ones that were overcooked. Karla Abdul Amalo, Mara Isa Lasos Kap, Mahi Rakos and Mahi Kashos, why are some of these tongues hard and some of them are soft? Amalo Rabbi Gamliel said, Lo Diyakla Shahan Kolden Halash. I want everyone at this table to understand that so much in our lives are dependent, are determined by our lashon, by our mouths, by our tongues. A mother wrote that if a person chooses to do so, oso saraka okasha, we have the ability to choose whether we want our mouth to be something that is strong, something that is going to be compassionate, something that is going to be mindful, something that is going to be helpful to people, or we can use our mouth, our lashon, to be something that is kasha, something that is catastrophic in our community and in our relationships. And we see it all the time. This is no secret to anyone. We see it all the time. And we know how dangerous the consequences are for just a simple word that we maybe should not have said and how much we regret ever having said such a thing. I'm sure the rabbi can tell you, or maybe, you know, maybe in this community this doesn't happen because everybody knows Shemiras Halasha. But at least in other communities there is such a concept that one member of a community will say something so negative to another person, and sometimes it's a family member, sometimes it's just a good friend, sometimes it's an acquaintance, sometimes it's just somebody who you know from shul, somebody you know from the neighborhood, from the supermarket, and you say something, and it's taken in the wrong way, and that's the end of the relationship. And I'm sure the rabbi has seen in his experience, years and years and years of repair are needed to mend that relationship and bring it back to where it was, if it ever gets back to where it should be. We have to be so careful. And Ashreita, how blessed you are that you have this opportunity to study together, to learn together, to grow together in this most important area and aspect of all of our lives. So in the sake of Chobos HaLevavos, I just wanted to learn together a little bit tonight some sources that maybe you didn't see as you were going through the Shmiras HaLashon, because it gives a little bit of a accessory to what Shmiras HaLashon is all about. Obviously, the Chafetz Chaim's job is not to quote from everywhere. He's writing a sefer to really guide us in what he believes are the laws that govern Shmiras HaLashon. But there's a lot in many of the other svarim, Sifrei Machshava, that are supposed to guide us as well. And sometimes the Chafetz Chaim doesn't quote all of them. So here in the sefer Chobos HaLevavos, in the 11th century, Rabbeinu Bechaya writes such a beautiful passage when he talks about refining a person's character. He says we talk all the time about character refinement, about changing ourselves, about being different. And we have dreams and aspirations and how we're going to change and how we're going to grow. But he says the first thing, most fundamental, in changing any behavior is to watch the way we speak. The tifresh in advar mavetelim. Achatia be'enecha hanas ha'ever ha'kavetche e'varecha yoser kala me'hanas v'shomcha. Some people have some limbs in their body that are hard to use. They have a leg that schleps along. It's not doing as much of a activity as a leg maybe used to do. Writes Rabbeinu Bechaya in the Chumash Avodos, the most difficult limb or organ of your body to move should be easier than the lips who have to think so many times before they move. Writes Rabbeinu Bechaya, think about the time when anyone in your family had a broken arm or broken finger and the pain that they go through to try to get themselves into the shower and try to put a shirt on, to try to get into something, to try to get dressed in the morning, it's so difficult, it's so painful. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, as painful and as difficult as that is, think 100 times more before you open your mouth, before you go and engage in a conversation that maybe you're going to regret later on. Go to the next paragraph. Befize achi, yesh min adin alecha leishtadil levavo lemashal bova al tatilo min adibra lemashal letuchal ala biladav. We should all be so careful because we know the consequences, as he ends off here. We have the ability to be constructive with our words, to be optimistic, to be encouraging with our words. And we've seen it. We do have the opportunity to really lift people's spirits and to help them. You know, the Kutzker once said an insight which is so, so relevant. And it goes as follows. I'm translating into English. Not all that is thought needs to be said. Not all that is said needs to be written. Not all that is written needs to be published. And not all that is published needs to be read. Let's listen to that again. The Kutzker is writing this way before our generation, way before WhatsApp groups, where you have people just forwarding the silliest things, such embarrassing clips that people send. And I think about it all the time. I remember during COVID, it was really in an explosive way. People were sending so many comments, so many different things. And I remember there was a video going around of somebody who was walking and part of his clothing fell off. I don't remember exactly what the details were. And I'm looking at this video and thinking, you know, you just sent this to me. Imagine if that video was you. Imagine if someone caught a video of you innocently walking down the street and something very embarrassing happens to you by no fault of your own, and then sends that video around to their family WhatsApp group, that then sends it to their extended family WhatsApp group, and then ultimately, as it goes around the world and back, it comes back to you and you realize, somebody got that embarrassing moment on video, not just on camera, but then they shared it with others, who then shared it with others, who then shared it with the world, who then brought it back to me. How embarrassing. And the Kutzker says again, not all that is thought needs to be said. Not all that is said needs to be written. Not all that is written needs to be published. But not all that is published needs to be read. And I think often about that. People complain, these articles I don't like, but the writer said, don't read them. You don't have to read everything. You don't have to read everything. You're upset about it? Stop reading. There's a certain local newspaper that I just cannot stand. I'm not going to say what it is. I just cannot stand it. I just don't bring it into my house anymore. You know what? I'm much happier for it. And what am I missing? A couple of ads of which restaurants are having a big sale this week and which stores on Central Avenue? I couldn't care less. My life has been just fine for the last few years without this magazine in my house. You don't have to read everything that's published. If you don't like it and it's negative and it brings negativity into your life and into your family, then keep it out. And that's what the customer wants us. I saw a story a number of years ago. It was very, very widely published in 2015. And I think it's an important story, especially when we talk about Shmiras HaLashon, just to appreciate what words can actually do and the consequences of words. The story is about someone by the name of Justin Seiko. Anyone ever heard of Justin Seiko? The story of Justin Seiko is an amazing story. And the title of this article is How One Stupid Tweet Blew Up Justin Seiko's Life. Okay, so let's hear the story. As she made the long journey from New York to South Africa, now South Africa is pretty far. A couple of months ago, I was in Australia. That's a lot further. It's actually an amazing flight. As you're flying, it's 6 hours to LA and then 16 hours to Australia. And as you're flying, you pass the international date line and the equator, all kinds of things that you never imagine seeing on the map on a plane. It's very exciting. So anyway, so this woman was traveling from New York to South Africa to visit family during the holidays in 2013. Justin Segal at the time was 30 years old and the senior director of a corporate communications at IAC, and began tweeting little jokes about the indignities of travel. Okay, so it's cute, starts out very nice. You write some little cute comments about this, that thing, I tripped over my suitcase, you know, the handle fell off, the wheel is not working properly, all kinds of things. Now, why the world needs to know it, I don't know. And for those of you who are looking at me like, who would really write that? Go onto Twitter one day in your life and you'll see the silliest things that people post. Okay, fine, inconsequential. That's the way to start. There was one about a fellow passenger on the flight from JFK International Airport. Okay, this is what she wrote. Weird German dude. You're in first class. It's 2014. Get some deodorant. Inner monologue as I inhale body odor. Thank God for pharmaceuticals. Okay, that was a tweet. Now, the world probably could have done without that tweet. She didn't do herself any favors by writing it. And on December 20th, before the final leg of her trip to Cape Town, right, so she had to take a connecting flight, before her final leg of her trip to Cape Town, she wrote as follows. Going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white. Okay? That's what she wrote. She chuckled to herself as she pressed the send on this last one, then wandered around Heathrow International Terminal for half an hour, sporadically checking her phone to see whether anyone had liked or replied. But no one had replied, which did not surprise her, as she only had 170 Twitter followers. So out of 170 people, how many of them happen to be up right now and looking at your tweets? All right, they'll get to it later. Fine. So she's watching and watching, and she's boarding the plane to see, did anyone comment on her very ridiculous and insensitive and racist comment that she just made? Segal boarded the plane. It was an 11-hour flight, and so she slept. When the plane landed in Cape Town and was taxiing on the runway, she turned on her phone. Right away, she got a text from someone she had not spoken to since high school. I'm so sorry to see what's happening to you. Segal looked at it, baffled. And then another text came in. You need to call me immediately. It was from her best friend, Hannah. And then her phone exploded with more texts and alerts, and then it rang. It was Hannah. You are the number one worldwide trend on Twitter right now, she said. Segal's Twitter feed had become a horror show. And they wrote as follows. I am an IAC employee, and I don't want Justin Segal doing any communications on our behalf ever again. And then another one from her employer, IAC, said, this is an outrageous offensive comment. The employee in question is currently unreachable because they are on an international flight. The anger soon turned into a lot of great excitement. All I want for Christmas is to see Justin Segal's face when her plane lands, and she checks her inbox and voicemail, and oh man, Justin Segal is going to have the most painful phone-turning-on moment ever when her plane lands. And where are we? We are about to watch this Justin Segal get fired in real time before she even knows that she's getting fired. The furor over Segal's tweet had become not just an ideological crusade against her perceived bigotry, but also a form of idle entertainment. Her complete ignorance of her predicament for over 11 hours lent the episode both dramatic irony and a pleasant narrative arc. Okay. Then a trend went around Twitter that started as follows. Has Justin Segal landed yet? Basically, what happened was people gathered in the airport in Cape Town to come greet Justin Segal and allow her to appreciate the great gift of her about to be fired by her employer. And by the time Justin Segal had touched down, tens of thousands of angry tweets had been sent in response to her joke. Hannah, meanwhile, frantically deleted her friend's tweet and her account. Segal didn't want to look at it, but it was far too late. Sorry, Justin Segal, wrote one user. Your tweet lives on forever. Late one afternoon last year, I met Justin Segal in New York at a restaurant in Chelsea called Cookstop. Just 3 weeks had passed since her trip to New York, and she was still a person of interest to the media. And she said, I cried out my body weight in the first 24 hours. It was incredibly traumatic. You do not sleep. You wake up in the middle of the night forgetting who you are. And she was basically fired from her job, was on suicide watch, all because of a tweet that she just couldn't hold herself back from sharing with the world that did nothing positive for her, Now, that is an extreme example. And you think about that, and you ask yourself, all that for what? All that for what? For one good life? You have 170 followers, so you'll get a little chuckle out of someone? Where did it bring you? What was the objective? What's the point? Did you make the world a positive place by sharing your comments? Is there anything good that could possibly come out from what it is that you just shared? And that is so much of what we need to think about, not only when we talk about social media, or when we talk about emails, when we talk about texts, when we talk about WhatsApps, but it's also just simply in the way that we speak, in the way that we interact, in the way that we talk to others, in the way that we talk about others. It's something that we need to think so carefully about every time we have the opportunity to open our mouths and to share anything. The Rambam writes, let's read it together in the Yeras HaRambam, number 12. Uima sharoi, you see here on the bottom. Uima sharoi shetedu she'en roi la'adam l'daber v'lidrosh ba'azneh ha'am. Ad she'yatsar ama sharotzono l'daber ha'am u'shtayim v'shalosh v'arba. The Rambam says a person should be careful not to share their words until they have reviewed them once, twice, three times, four times, says the Rambam. V'yishayim oso heted. And you need to go over it carefully. And only after that should a person think about speaking. Says the Rambam, this is only about something that you're going to utter with your mouth. Imagine, says the Rambam, something that I'm not just going to say orally, but something that I'm going to share in print. Something that I'm going to write down, says the Rambam. Roi lo sheyatsu lo olav elef ba'omim yil hoya efshah. Says the Rambam, if you have the ability, you should go over it 1,000 times before putting it somewhere in print. Amazing words of the Rambam. But now that we have the ability to not only write something, and it can be there for all eternity, for posterity, every word that we say can also be the same. You leave someone a voice note, you leave someone a voicemail, you talk publicly, someone is videoing you, every word is the same now as a written word, because it's something that can be around forever. And it's something that we may regret later. And says the Rambam, to think so carefully before getting involved in that kind of behavior. The Vilna Gaon writes in a letter that he left for his family. And it's a beautiful letter in general, but I just took out one small snippet. The Adio Mosot Sarfa Adam, the Yasser as Asmo, Philopatinus Visigufim, says the Gona Gon, a person should be careful to limit what it is that they indulge in life. We shouldn't be running after indulgences and accessories and extra things all the time. We should try to be the Yasser as Asmo, to limit the amount of indulgence that they have. However, he says, I don't mean they should not overindulge with food. I don't mean that they should go and pain themselves, but rather ki even rest and give the ta'avasa, to be so careful about overindulging in the way we use our mouths, not the way we use it for eating, but the way we use it for speaking. Vizui akshuba, vizet kol priya olam abba, vizel yosur mikala ta'amesa v'sigufim sheva olam. This is more meaningful than any fast day that we can have. We're about to commemorate a Tisha B'Av. We just had a Shabbat Sefer Tammuz. And it's difficult for us, but we feel we're doing something for God when we do so. Right? The Gona Gon, it would be more meaningful if a person would be able to spend a day on what he refers to as a kindness dibur, a person understanding that, let me limit the amount of speech that I share, let me limit the amount that I talk about others. That there is nothing greater than a person who is careful about the way that he speaks. It's interesting that when Yosef HaTzadik is having this tremendous encounter with his brothers, so the Torah tells us, Erlo Tolos Yaakov Yosef and Sheva Asrei Shana. Yosef at the time was only 17 years old. Hayaroes Achav Tatzon. He was the shepherd outside with the sheep. Buhu Naras Bnei Bilav Es Bnei Zilpan Neshei Aviv. Vayavi Yosef Es Nivasam Ra'al Abihem. Yosef had this uncomfortable relationship with his brothers. And he brings back, he reports to his father the gossip about what he saw them doing, about what he felt they were doing wrong. His father was unaware of what was happening, and Yosef felt it was his responsibility to share that with his father. Now what's interesting here is Rashi picks up on that idea of Yosef being 17 years old, and yet the Torah refers to him as a nar. You don't call a 17-year-old a child. He's not a little child. He's already an adolescent. He's already an adult. So why does the Torah refer to him as a nar? Rashi explains so beautifully. Everything that he saw wrong with his brothers, he was telling his father all kinds of terrible things about his brothers. And he just was incessantly sharing that information with his father. The Bala Torah writes, yeah, but why do we refer to him as a nar? Why is he referred to him as a child? He's not a child, he's an adult. He's an adolescent. Says the Bala Torah, nar is the gematria shevet. Nar is the gematria shevet. Shevet means a fool. Why is he a fool? What did he do wrong? Explains the Bala Torah, zer shenemar, umotzi diva huksilus. That, says the Bala Torah, is what it means, that someone who just talks and says negative things is considered a fool. And that is why he's referred to as a nar. He's not thinking like an adult. An adult doesn't speak this way. An adult is not supposed to use their speech to bring negativity into the world. An adult knows better than that. An adult knows not to use their words in such a fashion, in such a manner. An adult knows better. And if a person chooses to use their words for only negativity and to spread negative thoughts and feelings, the Torah refers to that person as a nar. What a foolish way to speak, what a foolish thing to do. It's not the way adults behave. It's a fascinating Gemara in the beginning of the Sefer Sefer, where the Gemara says, one of the Amoraim got sick, and at the time that he got sick, nobody was really sure what exactly happened to him. So they sent one of the students of the yeshiva to go check up on how this person was doing. And he came in and he saw that the person had passed away. So he ran his varmints and then, as he was leaving the home, he turns his shirt backwards so that nobody should see it right away when he walks into the Beis Medrash. Comes into the Beis Medrash and they said, you know, we sent you on a mission. We'd like to know what happened to our friend. And he says, well, you know, my shirt is backwards, my shirt is the wrong way. He made them understand in a roundabout way that obviously this person had passed away. And the Gemara says that he did not want to share negative information even when it was relevant to him. Even when he was sharing information that everybody would have wanted to know, it wasn't gossip, but it was negativity. It was sharing information that somebody had passed away who was a good friend of all those who were assembled. But yet, even then, we need to be so careful. It's interesting that this is actually a discussion in the Gemara and in the later Achronim. Do we have an obligation to share the information of somebody who passes away? Nowadays, it would be very difficult to withhold that information because we have emails and we have other ways of finding out. You're going to find out however which way you're going to find out. So it's very hard to hold that information back from someone. We actually had a shaila in our shul a couple of months ago. There was an elderly gentleman in our shul who was marrying off a grandchild. And he was so excited for the simcha. And he came to me about 2 weeks before the wedding and he said he has a brother who's on his deathbed. His brother is not particularly close with him, but they are brothers, and obviously he's going to have to sit shiva. And he said if he misses his grandson's wedding because he's going to be sitting shiva, he will be absolutely devastated. So what do you tell such a person? He wanted to know, can he go attend the simcha? Can he attend the wedding in the middle of shiva? Now obviously the answer to that is no. He's not allowed to attend the grandchild's wedding in the middle of shiva. So, sometimes they give them a job, sometimes they give them a photographer or a caterer or whatever. That's not in the middle of shiva. That's something that's not supposed to be done. And even then, it's on shaky ground. You have to ask the rabbi when it's appropriate to apply those kinds of attire and when perhaps not. But in general, what is a person like this supposed to do? And I told him there's plan B. And that is, I don't know if you're comfortable with it, but are you comfortable with your family not sharing the information with you should your brother pass away before the wedding? And he thought about it. He came back to me and he said, as uncomfortable as I am to say yes, yes, I'm comfortable not knowing that my brother passed away. That is exactly what happened. His brother passed away 3 days before the wedding. The entire family attended the levaya. Everybody went to go participate in the kavod ames as they should have. He is the only one who was not told. He was unaware. They all made sure to call him, not to share that information with him, but they shared other information with him, just to make it as if it was a regular day. He had no idea that anyone was going to the funeral. He was unaware. He went to his grandson's wedding, and after the wedding, he told him that this had happened. We actually found someone else to say Kaddish. He was the only remaining relative who could say Kaddish. He said Kaddish somebody else until his brother was able to be told. But that's really based on the comment of the Ramah, where the Ramah writes that a person doesn't have to share the information. So the Ramah says that perhaps we should share it with the children, because the children are the ones that are going to say Kaddish for the parent. So that would be denying the parent of that great merit, of that great zchus, of a child saying Kaddish on their behalf. But in general, says the Ramah, if Kaddish was not a factor, we would even hold this information, we'd hold it from children themselves. We wouldn't have to share it with them. Now, obviously, you have to have a situation where the child doesn't want to be told. It's inappropriate to withhold it if this person really wants to know. But in general terms, the Ramah says this is something that would be permissible. I once heard a story that the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a brother who passed away in Europe, in Russia. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, for 17 years, was writing letters to his mother and signing off his brother's name, because he didn't want his mother to have pain that her son had died while she was still alive. For 17 years, the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote letters to his mother because he didn't want to share the negative information that her son had died. And he wrote as if he was his brother. And he wrote all about the family, all about the children, he wrote all about his life. Meanwhile, he was making up the whole thing, pretending as if he was his brother. But he did it all because he didn't want to share negative information with his mother, because he knew it would break her, he knew it would hurt her. And that's where the Gemara says you have to make a very careful calculation. You have to really be deliberate about how your words are used, even when sometimes you feel that it's a great toelos, even when you feel sometimes that it's a great consequence to share these words, there's a way in which it needs to be done, and it has to be so carefully measured. I think about it all the time when we talk about Lashon Hara L'Toelos, and on the one hand, you can destroy someone's life by sharing this piece of information. On the other hand, you can destroy someone's life in the opposite direction. How often do we have a situation where a couple gets married and there was some pre-existing issue that you were aware of that is extremely relevant to this relationship? It's not something that's external. It's not something that's irrelevant to a marriage or a relationship. It's something that really does manifest itself in the dynamics of a relationship. And you knew about it and you did not share it. And then we see the devastating consequences later, and sometimes a couple needs to go through so much pain and so much torture and a major divorce, and everyone spends so much money, and all the kids that are lost in the middle of this whole shuffle, all of that because what? Because you didn't have the wherewithal to share the information when it was appropriate to share. Now the Chafetz Chaim tells us that although we have to be very careful with the way in which we share negative information, we have to be very careful in what we do share and what we perhaps do not. Says the Chafetz Chaim, we have a prohibition of Osama Adam Reyecha. If you know information that is extremely relevant to a situation that's unfolding, you have an obligation to share it. You know someone that's going into a business deal with a person who's just not straight, who's not honest, who's going to swindle them, who's going to make them lose money. You have to share that information. And if you don't, you're held accountable. So again, this is a balance, like everything in life. It's a balance that we always need to strike just perfectly. And sometimes it's hard for us to make that determination. And that is why the study of the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon helps guide us, helps us have the right perspective, helps us know exactly what we're supposed to share, in what proportions, at what stage, when are we supposed to share it, and how should it be done. And it's an opportunity for all of us to celebrate the efforts of this wonderful group when you come together on your WhatsApp group and you share in this experience of enriching your lives, of enriching this community, of really elevating the Jewish people by being so cognizant, by being so aware of the way in which you choose to speak, about bringing positivity into the world, about being understanding that other people's feelings and the consequences of my words can be something that are so, so important that we all need to think about. And all I can say is, it's such a beautiful schluss for me, such a beautiful opportunity for me to share just a little bit of this great program together with you. Aluba Hatzlichu, you should have the opportunity to continue to grow, to continue to be inspired, to continue to inspire others. And I wish you all simplest and wonderful things. As we move forward, we should share only in the series of time.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi. So, yes. So, thank you.
Okay, it's my pleasure. It's really my pleasure. Thank you. Okay.